Ladies and gentlemen, good morning and welcome to this preliminary meeting, which is being held under the examination procedure rules of the Planning Act 2008 in connection with an application for a development consent order made by National Grid Electricity Transmission PLC to the National Infrastructure Division of the Planning Inspectorate to seek paths to construct, operate and maintain a new 400,000 volt connection between Bridgewater, Somerset and Seabank substation north of Avonmouth, together with a range of related modifications to the electricity transmission and distribution network, which together comprise the Hinkley C connection project. Now, my name is Wenda Mackay. I'm a Bachelor of Law and non-practicing solicitor. I'm lead member and chair of this panel. Now, the other members of the panel, Ms. Coombs, Mr. Rees, Mr. Nowitzki, and Dr. McNichol, will now introduce themselves. Mr. Rees.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Richard Rees. I'm a civil engineer by profession. I hold a master's degree in that subject. I'm a fellow of the Institution of Civil Engineers and a fellow of the Chartered Institute of Highways and Transportation.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Alan Nowitzki. I'm an architect. I have qualifications, Bachelor of Architecture, MA, RCA, PhD, and I'm a member of the RIBA.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Annie Coombs. I'm a chartered landscape architect, a fellow of the Landscape Institute, and I also have a master's degree in town planning.
Morning. My name is Dennis McNichol. I'm a chartered engineer. I'm a fellow of the Institutions of Civil Engineers and Structural Engineers. I have a master's degree in geotechnics and a PhD in risk minimization in geotechnical engineering. Thank you.
Now, for anyone who may be interested, the Planning Inspectorate retains a full register of the interests of all its examining inspectors, and that is available upon request. Now, together, we are all the panel or examining authority, and we have been instructed by the Secretary of State for Communities and Local Government to examine, report, and make a recommendation on this application to the Secretary of State for Energy and Climate Change, who will be making the final decision. Now, we are assisted at this meeting and throughout the examination by the case leader, Mr. White, who is on my right, and Mr. White will now explain some housekeeping matters for the meeting today.
Morning, everyone. Just with regards to a couple of housekeeping matters, there's no fire alarm planned today, so if the fire alarm does go off, please exit by one of the exits, either the back of the room or the side of the room. And the assembly point is the town square's garden at the back of the room there. Toilets are situated at the rear of the building, just through the bar area, and there's water available to anyone who wants some water in the bar area. If you are going to speak today, can I please remind you to sign in at the registration desk that you saw on your way in. If you do want to speak, can you just put your hand up and one of our case team will come around with a microphone and then you can speak at the appropriate point. Please make sure that you give your name before you speak, just so we can capture that on the recording. If anyone intends to use social media today, we would ask that you do so responsibly and be aware of privacy of others. Any mobile phones that you have got, can you please put on silent? And finally, in terms of the press, if there is anyone from the press today here, can you make yourself known to Peter Ricketts, who is standing over there, and he'll be at the back of the room during the breaks. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. White. I'd also say, particularly for those at the back of the room, if for any reason you can't hear us or the sound system appears unclear, please do draw that to our attention and let us know. I'd also mention that we'll be looking to take a mid-morning break, and also we will be breaking for lunch around 1 o'clock for an hour if the meeting is continuing. Now, please do direct any inquiries or issues you may have regarding the process to Mr. White or another member of the Planning Inspectorate case team during breaks, and they will be very pleased to assist. Now, we will be following the agenda and referring to the relevant annexes sent to you in my letter dated 28th of November 2014, that is the Rule 6 letter, together with some additional procedural matters, including one which was attached as Annex G to that letter. Now, some 17 interested parties have notified us in advance of the meeting that they do wish to speak. And as Mr. White has explained, each time that you do come forward to speak, please do give us your name so that the note of the meeting can be accurate. And also, if you would kindly speak to one of the microphones so that we can capture that for the sake of the recording. Now, we are very interested and very keen to hear your representations about how this application should be examined, and we will be bringing in all those who have notified us that they wish to speak. However, there are some matters that we do need to deal with and explain first. Now, for those of you who may not be familiar with the examination process, my colleague, Mr. Nowicki, will now give a short explanation of the principles involved in the examination process and the purpose of this meeting today.
In general terms, we aim to examine the planning case for granting or refusing consent to the application before us, and then proceed to considering, if development consent were granted, whether compulsory acquisition powers would be justified. And then finally, with respect to both those elements, how any development consent order should be drafted. The examination, as stated in section 90, brackets 1 of the Act, is to take the form of consideration of written representations about the application. Written representations are the main type of evidence which the examining authority will take into account, and it is therefore important for all parties to set out their cases in the written representations made and not simply rely upon attendance at a later hearing. The examining authority's questions will therefore be of great importance, and the examining authority will expect its questions to be answered directly and fully. It will be in everyone's interest to do so. There are three potential methods through which we can examine the application. Firstly, written evidence. Secondly, site inspections, both unaccompanied and those in the company of interested parties. And thirdly, hearings. As stated in section 87(1) of the 2008 Act, it is for the examining authority to decide how to examine the application. The draft timetable in the Rule 6 letter sets out a number of hearing and site visits which are proposed by the examining authority. If you consider that there's a need for an issue-specific hearing on another topic, on the grounds that one is required in order to have a fair chance to put your case, you should make these comments today, as this will be the only opportunity to make oral submissions on this point. The purpose of this preliminary meeting, as set out in section 88 of the Act, is to enable invitees present to make representations to us about how the application should be examined, rather than about the content of the application, and to discuss any other matter that the examining authority wishes to discuss, and also any other matter that may be specified in the procedure rules made under section 97 of the Act. It is not appropriate to discuss the merits of the application today, only how it should be examined. This is because the examination does not begin officially until after this meeting, when the timetable will be issued. All the points made at this meeting today will be considered by the panel and taken into account in making our procedural decisions, including those concerning the timetable, which we'll send to you as soon as practicable in a letter under Examination Procedure Rule 8. Under Rule 7, a written note of this meeting and any decisions taken at it will be provided and published on the National Infrastructure pages of the Planning Portal website. Proceedings will also be audio recorded and made available as soon as possible. So please do not speak unless into one of the microphones, otherwise your contribution may not be recorded. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nowicki. Now, looking at our agenda for today and what we will be considering, the first item that I would like to deal with is not actually on the Annex B agenda. It relates to a procedural matter, and this was raised at Annex G of the Rule 6 letter, namely the acceptance of the information relating to the potential revision of the bilateral connection agreement that was submitted by the applicant's letter of the 1st of October 2014. Now, we've had three subsequent letters from the applicant on this topic, dated 14th and 18th December 2014 and the 15th of January 2015, and one on behalf of the Joint Councils dated the 9th of January 2015. All those letters have been published on the Planning Inspectorate website. Now, just by way of introduction to the consideration of this matter, the Rule 6 letter set out the examining authority's position as regards the examination of any potential change to the application or to the environmental information relating to the change set out in the applicant's letter of the 1st of October 2014. Now, the applicant's letter of the 4th of December 2014 requested that the examining authority revisit its procedural decision set out in the Rule 6 letter. The examining authority responded by letter dated 15th December to the effect that the examining authority would not be revisiting that decision until this procedural meeting. The applicant's subsequent letter of 18th December requested the examining authority to examine both construction programs and their environmental effects pending the completion of contractual documentation that would change the project connection date. Now, the applicant also indicated that should the examining authority be minded not to examine both sets of information, then it requested that the environmental statement sensitivity test documents submitted on the 1st of October 2014 be examined, as that represented the most likely of the two scenarios at that time. Now, our latest letter from the applicant, dated 15th of January 2015, confirms that the revised contractual documentation giving effect to the proposed change to the project connection date has now been agreed between National Grid and EDF Energy. So the panel would now ask the applicant to provide an update on its position on this matter, having regard to the points made by the examining authority, both in its Rule 6 letter and its subsequent letter of the 15th of December, and also having regard, of course, to the points that have been raised by interested parties. So, who appears for the applicant, please?
Good morning, Madam. My name is Michael Humphreys. I'm Queen's Counsel, appearing on behalf of National Grid Electricity Transmission. In relation to the particular point you've raised, I am pleased to be able to confirm that last week a revised connection agreement was signed, which moves the connection date for the Hinkley Point C connection project back from October 2019 to the new date of October 2022. Madam, you will be aware from submitted material that the connection offer was made in August of last year, and at that date, in anticipation that the connection agreement would be signed, we prepared a sensitivity test on the environmental statement. And that was submitted, as you have said, in October last year. The effect of the revised connection date is that National Grid has a longer period within which construction could take place, and also has to have regard to the different outage program. That's the regular outages of lines necessary for them to be maintained that would apply with the later connection date. And as a result of that, we came up with a revised connection program. You will have seen from that material some elements of the program actually get shorter and some get longer, but the overall effect is a lengthening of the program. What we did was to test that to see whether it has an effect on the environmental effects, and the result in short was that there were no additional significant environmental effects. Madam, in the circumstances now where the revised connection agreement has been signed, we would like to add that material, the sensitivity test, to supplement the existing environmental statement, to represent the effects of a longer and later construction program. We're not asking that the original material be withdrawn. The material shows what the effects would be of a shorter construction program. But we are able to confirm that with the later connection date, it's the longer program which we now believe to be the most likely, and therefore the one where we would suggest attention is focused during the examination.
That's helpful to receive that clarification, Mr. Humphreys. Perhaps you could indicate, though, that the agreement has been signed.
Correct.
So this is the construction period and the changes that are set out in the ES sensitivity test. That is what is going to be followed. Is that correct?
Madam, assuming the start date is as in that sensitivity material, in other words, assuming that some other unforeseen event doesn't intervene to mean that we can't start when we anticipated, that is, the sensitivity material gives you the start date, the end date is the connection date, and therefore the 76-month program over the course of the or the length of the 57-kilometer line would be as set out in that material.
And in terms of the significance of this change or how this information should be regarded, for example, in terms of the EIA regulations, is there anything you want to say to the panel about that?
Yes, we would regard this as information coming within Rule 17 of the examination procedure rules. It's additional information which is being submitted, and Rule 17 would allow you to require that of us. It's in effect supplementary material to reflect what is now seen to be the most likely length of construction period, so that you would have, and all objectors would have, in effect a range, a shorter construction program, which was reflected in the initial environmental statement, and a longer construction program in the sensitivity test. And as I've confirmed, we now anticipate that the longer construction program would be the one most likely to be the one that came about in reality.
In terms of those regulations, is the applicant's position that it's classified, should be classified or regarded as further information or other information?
We would regard it as Rule 17 information rather than Regulation 17 information under the EIA regulations. Under Rule 17, Madam, as of course I know you will know, there's no requirement for public notices, but if you thought it appropriate, we would be more than happy to put a notice in a newspaper notifying that there is now a revised connection date, that we have undertaken sensitivity testing in relation to that, and the material has of course been on your website since October. People will have had an opportunity to see it for several months. And then when, Madam, for the second deadline date, which I think is 24th of February, where people can put in written representations, obviously they would have an opportunity that at that point to comment on this material insofar as they thought it was material or made any related to their particular cases.
So in terms of any additional consultation that the panel, if they did agree to admit this material, if they considered additional consultation was required, in terms of responses to the newspaper advert that the applicant would be willing to publish, those responses, would the applicant provide a consultation report and admit that to the examination?
Madam, we don't think it's necessary to do that. This would not be an additional consultation period, because of course the application is exactly the same. We're applying for exactly the same project with exactly the same land take and so on. We're simply providing some additional environmental information in the event, as we expect now, that the construction program takes longer. And what the material shows is that the longer program doesn't produce any additional significant effect. So we're not convinced that a consultation period would be appropriate, but clearly it's additional information. Madam, not unlike in some ways, if I may put it like this, during the course of the examination itself, parties will produce material, the authorities will produce local impact reports, which will contain environmental information. We will answer your questions, which may involve us in answering things which provide environmental information, and there won't be additional consultation periods on any of those. And we regard this information in exactly the same way. It's some additional material which demonstrates that the construction program and its effects are not, in effect, sensitive to a change in the length of the construction period. And so those parties who want to comment, in a sense, don't need to comment to us at this stage. They would comment directly to you in their material on the 24th of February.
Well, presumably if a newspaper advert, it's being an advert to the wider public who may not be interested parties. So how does the applicant envisage all those parties who are not who are members of the general public who have not yet expressed a view to be part of this particular examination, how will their views be relayed to the panel?
Madam, firstly, I would anticipate that parties that had wanted to become interested parties would have already become interested parties. After all, we're not suggesting a change to the proposed development, simply a sensitivity test on the period over which the construction works would take place. But, Madam, as you know, and unfortunately I don't have the act in front of me, I have it on my laptop behind me, but at points during the examination, parties can ask to be able to make representations to you if they are not formally interested parties, and you have a discretion to allow them to do so. And I suppose, Madam, if someone came along and said, well, look, I was very happy with the project when it had the shorter construction program, but now it's moved back, I wish to object to it, they would write to you and you would exercise your discretion in the normal way, and that sort of thing not infrequently happens during examinations.
Well, we do have that discretion, and I believe it was the joint councils may have made an earlier point in correspondence to the effect that members of the public who might be affected in a different manner as a result of the different construction periods may not have initially registered or expressed an interest, and therefore I believe the joint councils were seeking for a wider opportunity for people to become involved if this additional material and this additional program were to be introduced.
Yes, Madam, in a sense that goes directly to my point that we could, if you thought it appropriate, publish a notice drawing attention to the connection agreement and to the existence of the sensitivity test material. As I've said, I'm not sure that a consultation period as such is appropriate because what would we be consulting them on? We're telling them that we have signed a revised connection agreement and that that does allow us, therefore, to undertake the project over a different time period. I think the more important point is that those who are parties who want to then comment on that material have the opportunity to do so, and of course they would. The material's been available for many months, and in their written representations they will do so. And insofar as there is anyone at all who, as I've said, was content with the program and its environmental effects before, but objects to those being incurred 1 or 2 years later, Madam, of course, they will have the opportunity to write to you and for you to exercise your discretion. And it is important to note that the revised construction program doesn't involve more work or more pylons or pylons in different places. It just happens at a different time. And so a person living in a particular place, instead of perhaps having the works near them during the course of 2018, may instead, the work may be carried out during 2019. The work, once the project is completed, of course, the project is exactly the same project. It may be that, you know, the summer of 2019, they have some vehicles on local roads rather than 2018. But in other respects, things are the same. There's no more work.
J- Just in terms of the timing of responses, additional responses, if this were to be advertised, you mentioned, I believe, the deadline to date of the 24th of February.
Yes.
In your view, in the applicant's view, is that giving sufficient time?
Well, normally, in the context that I was talking there, it was of people who are parties who want to make representations. If, Madam, you wanted to give a cut-off date for people who weren't currently parties to ask you if they could become parties, it could be that that was a 28-day period. Now, the newspaper advertisement could not go in immediately. We have made inquiries, and I think it would have to go in the week beginning the 26th of January. If I've got that wrong, someone will furiously shake their heads. I'll just check. Yes. So, in effect, an advertisement would have to go in next week's paper. We wouldn't be able to do it this week, which would make any additional parties that wanted to join because they were unhappy with the later material, they would have to do that by a date which was after the 24th, your deadline too. But, Madam, in those circumstances, firstly, you would consider whether or not to accept those, and secondly, no doubt you would give people, on an individual basis, although you may choose common dates for all of them, a period within which they could put in further material if they wanted to. And Madam, I think that would be, if I may respectfully suggest, more efficient than people making representations to us, than us having to collate that material, and then us having to produce a consultation report on that, and then that being submitted to you. And I think here, the sort of idea that I've tentatively put forward, it seems my respectful view, the most sort of efficient way of dealing with it. And these things do happen from times to time. And as I say, during the course of the examination, there will be no doubt all sorts of additional material that's put in response to questions or in response to what other parties have said.
I've heard what you said, Mr. Humphreys, but if the panel were to take a contrary view and seek to require the applicant to compile those responses and present them to the examining authority, would the applicant agree to do that?
Madam, you're the inspector. You can order us to do anything you like. It may say QCA after my name, but I do recognise my position. I'm just the representative. Of course, we would do whatever you thought was most appropriate in the circumstances. I've simply put forward what seems to me an appropriate way forward. I would draw a contrast, for example, with the circumstance in the recent Thames Tideway Tunnel examination, where at the preliminary meeting the applicant there, Thames Water, was asked to advertise and undertake consultation. But of course that was different. That was an amendment to the application. This is not an amendment to the application. It's simply some supplementary material in the environmental statement. And as I say, that happens frequently during during examinations. And it's not normal, actually, to advertise at all, let alone ask for consultation. But Madam, obviously, we will do whatever you require of us.
If you could just perhaps help the panel a little further with as to whether this is an actual change to the application or not. The project, as you say, remains the same, and the period is set out in the development draft, development consent order, within which the work is to be undertaken, is not changed as a result of this. But nevertheless, the environmental statement on which the whole application is based didn't give consideration to these particular alterations to the construction project.
Madam, would you allow me just for a moment to get my laptop? It just has the legislation. Would that be acceptable?
Thank you.
Yes, Madam. The application for development consent is the application itself. The application, however, may be accompanied by various documents. So, for example, in section 37, you will see applications for orders granting development consent. And that must be accompanied by documents and information in a prescribed form. Madam, one of the documents that has to accompany an application is the environmental statement. And if you look at the applications prescribed forms regulations, it will draw attention to, when I get to it, the various documents that must accompany an application. Now, here we haven't amended the application. The application is the application. The development is the development. But it's quite normal in environmental statements. Sorry, it's quite normal in environmental statements to assess the environmental impacts of a particular development, and in relation to a construction impact, quite typically the developer will look at what they anticipate to be the construction period. Now here, the construction period can move back because the connection date moves back, and that would allow us, assuming development consent was granted on the date in accordance with the statutory period, and assuming there wasn't a legal challenge which in effect delayed that, the construction period would be as shown. But of course, if there was a legal challenge which caused the start of construction to be delayed and we still had to meet the end connection date, the construction period could be a shorter construction period once again. We can't control that, and the development consent or no development consent I've ever seen requires construction to take place on a certain date or to start on a certain date. The environmental statement assesses what is likely significant effects. And that's why actually it is not unhelpful, as I've said, to have this range to show what a shorter construction period is and a longer construction period to show that the two don't change. So we don't see this as a change in the application, in, if I may put it like this, the sort of purest sense. It's us examining what would happen if the construction period were to be later and to be longer. And the net effect is there's frankly very little difference. So archaeology, for example, if you have an effect on a piece of archaeology, it doesn't make a material difference whether that's in 2018 or 2019. It's the same effect. There are some effects that might be slightly different, but they don't have additional significant effects. A longer period might, for example, mean, because it's less intense, that at any one period the amount of traffic on the road actually goes down slightly because you're not doing so much in a shorter time. So, Madam, I think we don't regard this as an amendment to the application. It's some additional environmental information.
Is it perhaps an omission from the environmental statement that all potential working program scenarios had not originally been included or covered by that? And I think from the panel's point of view, the development is the that would be granted is covered by the development consent order, but it should also reflect what has been considered by the environmental statement. And whilst it might not be a change in the purest sense, is this not in effect a change to that application?
Well, Madam, in a sense I've answered that. I don't think that this is a sensitivity that we could have entertained before we were in the position where we were asked for a later connection date. The connection agreements impose a legal duty on us to connect by a certain date. We would obviously, at the time of the environmental statement, have had to have worked towards that. As soon as that changed, we recognized very quickly that we would need to take on board the environmental effects, if any, of that change, and at the very earliest date, produce the information. So we informed EDF of what the revised connection date would be, I think, on the 19th of August last year, and by the beginning of October, we had made the sensitivity test material available, and I think by the 9th of October it was on your website. So National Grid has actually moved with enormous speed to make sure that the information is available. And Madam, one shouldn't, and it is important to reassure others who may not be familiar with the material, this doesn't identify any new significant effects. What it says for the most part is that any changes would be very, very minor, but a construction impact may simply be, you know, a year later than was originally thought, or 2 years later than originally thought.
Sorry, Mr. Nowitzki has a question.
Of course, sir.
Yes, I'm a little unclear about the effect on living conditions. We have a longer construction period. There may well be longer periods of disruption to the living conditions of local residents arising from that. I don't know if you have any
Yes, sir.
Thoughts on that?
I think the point to bear in mind in relation to this is that, of course, the longer construction period we're talking about is over the entire length, the 57 kilometres. For a resident in any one location who might be affected most obviously by things close to them, there the construction period, the people will erect the towers and string them in broadly the same sort of way that they would have before. It's just that the overall sections will be divided out over a longer period, so that it's not that there is an individual who is going to experience things over a much longer period. The principal thing that lengthens the program, and you can see it in the first volume of the material, where there are various summary tables, relates actually to the underground cables. What's now proposed is that those would be constructed in three-kilometre stretches, and actually, maybe thought that actually, in some respects, has some benefits. But rather than me try and summarise that, I mean, it is set out in the particular material. But as I've made it clear, no one is suggesting there isn't some additional length of line or cable being erected. It's just simply how it is phased. And one of the things that makes the difference is the need to fit in with existing outages on the lines, so that we can where we need to connect into lines, we can do it having regard to existing outage periods, which just those outage programs, and Mr. Bryant, who was sitting next to me, could tell you about this if you wanted to know the detail. But those sorts of outages are usually booked, I believe, 1 or 2 years ahead. I can't see behind me. If they're furiously shaking their heads, then I'll revise that. But they're usually booked ahead, and they will be different during different periods. And so what we've had to do with the later connection date is look at the existing system outages to make sure that work that would need to be undertaken to existing live lines can happen during outage periods, and that other work can be undertaken when lines are available and so on.
All right, thank you, Mr. Humphreys.
Madam, are you happy for me to kind of return to the back benches?
Yes.
For the moment.
For the moment.
Thank you.
Now, can I ask if there are any other interested parties who wish to comment on this? Thank you.
Thank you. My name's Jonathan Riley. I'm a solicitor from a law firm called Pinsent Masons, appearing on behalf of all six local authorities through whose areas the project will pass. From the authorities' perspective, we're keen to ensure that all communities and businesses have a fair chance to find out about the changes that have just been discussed, and if not already registered, to have the chance to register as interested parties. They also need the time to review material that may be new to them. We acknowledge that the material has been on the website for some time, but many communities and businesses may have taken the decision not to review it until it was accepted into the examination. Ultimately, and I accept this isn't a matter we will get into today, those communities and businesses need to ensure that they have the ability to discuss adequate mitigation to cover the range of scenarios presented by National Grid for construction programs and any degree of uncertainty which is created by examining two scenarios in the alternative. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Riley. I think it is now clear that it is the revised material that we will be looking for at. So that clarification is helpful for everyone, I believe. The point that you did make, I believe, Mr. Riley, in your letter to us, agenda item 21, that was on the timetable. There was a reference to further information. I think in connection with this, you did indicate that you would welcome an early decision on whether or not to accept the 1st of October submission. And certainly the panel can indicate that we will be making a procedural decision on this, certainly sooner rather than later, and hopefully that will be notified to everyone within the Rule 8 letter. The panel also wanted to confirm, I think, agenda item 21, that you were querying whether that was an intention to make a Regulation 17 request. I think the panel confirmed that that wasn't actually the purpose of that point. It was just in connection with any further information that might arise at that time. Perhaps the use of the word further information is confusing, given its significance in environmental regulation terms.
Thank you.
I just wondered, if I could perhaps go back to Mr. Riley. You've heard the potential changes to timings in the event that the panel were to accept this additional information from the applicant. Is there anything that you want to add from the Joint Council's point of view in relation to the impact that that might have on deadlines or submissions, or to give certainly the Joint Councils and everyone else an opportunity to respond to that?
Hello, Madam. I'm Andrew Goodchild. I'm here representing West Somerset Council. I think there's a couple of things to add to what Mr. Riley said earlier. Our ongoing review of the material in some instances indicates a longer period of disruption as well as a later period of construction, and I would just highlight the construction compound around Tarnock as one example of that, just whilst you're bearing in mind how to handle the sensitivity analysis data. From our perspective, it is important that, as Mr. Riley said, that information is published and advertised as in the manner described, and it will be important in terms of deadlines and any submissions into the examination panel to give up people the opportunity to look at and reflect on that information, but also for any other interested party, whether they be new or indeed an existing interested party, to comment on any of those representations as they are made. So we do think that there would need to be some changes to the examination timetable, albeit that could presumably be accomplished within the 6 months examination timetable. But that there is a process to be followed. I don't suppose any of us have that written down in terms of a form to present to you today, but that is quite important from our perspective, especially from residents and businesses who may not be aware of this information, albeit that as local authorities we were made aware of it at the same time as your good selves.
We will be coming to the detailing of the timetabling matters later on, but Mr. Riley, you have made a particular point in relation to the local impact report, and I don't know if you want to comment on that now.
I think you're referring to the point about having the opportunity to submit an addendum to the local impact report, is that correct?
Yes.
The authority's concern was that deadline two, I think it is, requires National Grid to submit an annex of proposed mitigation, which will be a very helpful tool for everybody involved in the examination. Our concern was that we had the opportunity then to comment on that subsequent to deadline two, within fairly short order, as we would have prepared our local impact report around the same time, and it was just having a chance after deadline two to make sure that the two would match up as closely as possible in terms of the positions of National Grid and the local authorities. Could I just...
Can you remind me, did you have a suggested timing for that?
I believe we suggested deadline three to fit in with your existing timetable.
Yeah, that's correct. Just in terms of what should be called a local impact report or not, is this a submission you're suggesting of the local impact report in two parts, or how do you envisage that taking place? For example, you know, there's no definition as such, and nothing that I can see that says it can't be in two parts. But on the other hand, it does seem that the thrust of the legislation and guidance does seem to talk about a report. It's just whether the guidance and the legislation allows for our consideration of two separate aspects of what is the local impact report.
Logically, for the authorities to be able to submit a comprehensive local impact report or reports that deal with the impacts on their areas, they need to have had sight of the final version of the mitigation annex. Now, I'm sure that we'll be continuing to work closely with National Grid, and I'm hopeful that we will have sight of that mitigation annex as it evolves, but we won't see the final version until it is submitted to you, and we would therefore want to be able to make representations on it after that date. We've phrased that as, or described it as, an addendum to our local impact report. If we need to call it something different, then so be it. But the point is, we need to be able to make representations on it.
I don't know if the applicant has any comments that they wish to make on that.
Madam Michael Humphreys, again, I say that just for the recording. Madam, I don't think it's necessary for the Joint Councils to update their local impact report. That's a particular report that would be put on a particular timescale, has a particular statutory meaning. I think what Mr. Riley is asking, not unreasonably, is that if we put in a mitigation schedule, which is in effect a document that pulls together in one document the mitigation that we're proposing and the various mechanisms for securing it. So, for example, it would be mitigation that's identified in the environmental statement or following discussion with the authorities, and it would then indicate that this would be secured by a Section 106 agreement or a requirement or whatever. Clearly, when that document is put in, as is normal in all examinations, at the next following deadline, you would give people an opportunity to comment on that. We could have no possible objection to that, and indeed, as a result of those further comments, any questions you put to us, anything that was raised during issue-specific hearings, it may well be that we then update that schedule of mitigation so that towards the end of the examination you have, in a sense, the composite document that reflects things and pulls things together. That's the use and the power of such a document. I don't think that National Grid has any objection at all to people being able to comment on that. Indeed, in many ways, it would be extremely helpful. But I don't think it's necessary to update the local impact report to do that. It's just comment on a document in the normal way.
Thank you. I think there's a gentleman over here, or lady. Sorry, whichever you choose.
I'll sit down, actually. My name is Fiona Early, and I represent Nailsea residents in a group called Nailsea Against Pylons. It's probably fairly obvious how we think. There are two things here that concern me. One is at a information level, listening to you all speak here, about interested parties and not being registered or with the planning inspectorate. It's very clear to me that there's been, as a member of the community, there's been very little public statements, information put out to the community about where we are in the process since the planning application was made. And I feel very strongly that the timing and length of the process means that there are people out there, communities, maybe even businesses, who are affected, who are unaware of this project. And I do feel they need to be kept up to date with media and so on, with statements from National Grid, for instance. I personally, as an interested party, have found it very difficult to get to the information I need because of the size of it, and it would be very helpful to still have some kind of helpline, perhaps, from National Grid, as there was when there was the formal consultation, people who could call up, who could ask, where do I find this piece of information? Because as a member of the public, I do this in my spare time, as does everybody else, and I don't have the expertise at all to be able to find this information very easily. So I think that some sort of communication with the public would, on a regular basis or at key stages, milestones, whatever, would be very helpful. And I think that a change in terms of the timing of which this is, in terms of the connection with Hinkley C, is one of those key stages, as I'm sure you'll agree, that's the point of this morning's talk. So that's one thing that I do think is important. The second thing that concerns me is flexibility, by which I mean the flexibility within this proposal to have changes at a later stage, including we already got a minor, shall we say, extension of the date here, but it's very clear to us, those of us who read up in the press about what's going on with other nuclear builds elsewhere in the world, and also by EDF, that the time frame and the need of this connection by 2022 is probably unlikely to happen by 2022. And I think there's a huge concern in the community that the construction of this project will go ahead without the nuclear build even happening, for instance, would be one scenario, or another scenario with that it would not be ready for another number of years. And so we would request that there is flexibility in the program to start later, to not go ahead with it at all if there's any concern that the actual build would not go ahead, and so on. I don't know how you fit that all in with your legal process. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an environmental person. I'm a concerned member of the community. Thank you.
Thank you.
The delays are relevant and perhaps may work in your favour, Chairman. May I introduce myself without going through a full CV? I have a bachelor's degree in engineering that's useful for designing structures, a master's degree in ocean engineering, useful for putting structures in the sea, like undersea electric cables. I have a PhD in high voltage engineering, useful. I'm a member of BSI, JPL 64, useful for electric safety. I'm a member of PEL 636, useful for insulations and high voltage. I represent this country on TC36, world-class insulation for high voltage. I also the UK principal expert on TC64 MT4, That's protection from electrocution. Useful. I also represent other standards committees, ASME, designing cranes in nuclear facilities. Useful. Dangerous area to work. High levels of safety. I'm also on ASTM standards, high voltage tools. Useful if you work near them. And UL, effects of electrocution. More importantly, Chair, I never worked for National Grid. I've never met another person in England who hasn't and is in high voltage. So perhaps I have an independent mind, I cannot even see a proposed pylon, so it's not a NIMBY situation either. But I have a long-term view for the benefit of this country and our children. So that was my background, of which you already have documented evidence provided. And I want to talk about procedures, because we're here about procedures today. I want the time that the delay occurs to be useful for National Grid to catch up with technology which is being used in third world countries, perhaps Namibia and Egypt. Unfortunately, National Grid in procedure chose not to list some of our documentation, such as Professor Newman's reports, which we provided to you. Unfortunately, this is the major omission from the agenda, I may suggest, Chair. There would be a public outcry if HS2 was to be only offered with 1860 steam engines. Can you imagine? There would be a public outcry if mobile transmission towers could only be used by carrier pigeons. There would be a public outcry, wouldn't there, if wind farms could only grind corn. Chairman, there is a public outcry. The National Grid are using overhead power lines, fancy using such old technology. Remember, on the record, National Grid said there was no technology to put cables undersea when they already owned them. Remember, on record, National Grid did not consider gas-insulated lines when they owned such asset. Remember, we are a first-world country, Chair, and we shouldn't have to follow third-world technology. I suggest that in our agenda, we consider the evidence put before you by concerned people about better technology, better ways, better for our country, better for National Grid, better for the environment, better for safety, and better for our children. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. If I can just mention that we'll bear in mind your comments to us when we come later on to principal issues. Thank you.
Madam Chairman, my name is Richard Parker. I represent parish councils of Compton, Bishop, Mark and Badgeworth. I speak on behalf of about 2,500 people, sorry, I should say electors. There are more people who aren't on the electoral roll. I'm very disturbed at Mr. Humphrey's assertion that it won't impact people having an extension. If you live along a drove road which is being used by all the construction, you've got a bell mouth with the construction traffic going in and out, those people are affected. The 50% additional time required for putting in the link through undergrounding, through the A and B area, that will affect people. It will also affect trade, it will affect the holiday trade, and it will impact people who drive down to the West Country and see a scar on the landscape. I fully support Mr. Pratt's comments he made there, that if National Grid had pursued the areas of gas insulated line or subsea, that wouldn't be an impact or a scar, and it wouldn't impact the people. People are important. I would also say that any length of time that this consultation is extended has a direct impact on the people representing the electorate. In May this year, we will have elections. There are many, many councillors who will not stand for a re-election. Therefore, the knowledge that they've gained over the last 5 to 7 years will be lost. Therefore, the new councils will not be able to participate in such a way that we have so far. And that is a very, very important issue. I would also say that the amount of documentation that we have to read through are read by people on parish and town councils. The parish councils particularly are unpaid. They do not have resources. My precept gives me £6,000 a year, and I can't do very much on £6,000 a year. I probably couldn't afford to pay a QC's fee for today if I was to try and engage one. We have no money. We've got our own time to read the documents and produce reports, and I think if this is extended, the consultation will have flawed in our opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Parker.
Chairman James Heapy, I'm the parliamentary candidate for the Wells constituency. I'm also resident in Axbridge. One of the key drivers for public opinion in the Cheddar Valley, so the A38 corridor, beyond what these pylons will physically look like, is the danger of the construction of the pylons colliding with traffic required for the construction of Hinkley itself. And although the second Cheddar Reservoir has been delayed by a decision by Ofwat, there's still the threat of that running over the same period. So the delay that has been discussed in the construction is actually significant in the way that it affects public opinion, because people at home are plotting the lorries that are going to be moving for the construction of Hinkley, the lorries that are going to be moving for the construction of the pylons. And therefore, if I may urge you to seek a thorough consultation with people over this delay, it would be important to do so, because you may well find that people see that delay as being a greatly increased amount of traffic on the roads, as both Hinkley and the pylon line are being built concurrently. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else who wishes to comment on this particular point? Well, thank you, everyone. We will consider that particular proposal, and our procedural decision on that will be conveyed to you in the Rule 8 letter, which will follow this meeting. Now, Mr. Humphreys, there is some additional updated documentation. By letter dated 9th of January, the applicant gave advance notice to the examining authority of its intention to seek to introduce certain updated application documents to the examination. And I wondered if the applicant could now fully explain its position with regard to those documents.
Madam Michael Humphreys, once again, yes, of course, I will do that. Madam, since the application was submitted in May of last year, we have continued to discuss matters with a number of parties, particularly the authorities through the Joint Councils Group, but also other stakeholders as well, particularly in the context following your Rule 8 letter of the parties with whom you wanted us to agree statements of common ground. That item, statements of common ground, I know would be covered later on your programme, so I won't touch on progress on that now. But suffice it to say at this stage, obviously, we have been making progress on those matters, but inevitably that has led at times to us deciding to update particularly some of the mitigation documents, and principal amongst them is the construction environment management plan and the various plans appended to it. We've also since May, been keeping on top of the Book of Reference. Madam, I know you will know what that is, but for other people, I will just make clear that's the book that sets out all the various land interests and so on. And not surprisingly, with the length of line, you know, there have been changes in land ownership and so on. And so we have identified a list of documents that we would like to update, and in three cases, new documents, again, arising out of the discussions we've had with the authorities and stakeholders. I believe we have some copies of that list. Madam, could they be handed to Mr. White so that you can be given them? Madam, I will give you a very brief overview of what they are, and our intention is that they would be submitted later this week, and that will also assist the parties who are involved in the statements of common ground, because it will allow them in many cases to be able to agree things, because they'll say that we have found common ground and National Grid has reflected this in an updated document. So amongst the updated documents, there is a revised Book of Reference and a revised Schedule of Variation that updates changes in land ownership since May. It updates various classes of rights being acquired where that has changed in a very few instances. Changes to that document, Madam, we would anticipate would be, we would supply a clear copy and a tracked copy so that you could see where there were changes. Land plans is a second one. Again, we need to update those in some cases to reflect the changes in the Book of Reference, and also very close to the Wessex Water sewage treatment works at Avon Mouth, because of some changes that they've made to their plant there, we've discussed with them over some time, moving a tower, and that requires us to just change some of the plots on the land plan. The interests and the rights to be acquired are exactly the same, and it's all within the order limits, but we would slightly move the centre line to accommodate them and the limits of deviation. And that also is reflected then in the works plan, which is item 3 you have. And similarly, the trees to be removed or affected plan. So that those things all relate to a single tower near their sewage treatment works. What you then have from item 1.5 on the list are a series of other reports. Again, further work with the Environment Agency has caused us to update the flood risk assessment, and we would produce, I think it's part of the document, but we would make sure that there is a short note there so that you know what the changes are. You don't have to search through the document. 1.6 is the draft construction environment management plan, and that's the document that captures the environmental management and mitigation during the construction period. Again, that changes to accommodate things that the local authorities and others want. There is a changes table in that document, again, to save you time. And then that document has a number of appendices, and 5 of those get updated for exactly the same reason. So there's the outline waste management plan, the biodiversity mitigation strategy, the outline written scheme of investigation for mitigation of effects on archaeological remains, the draft construction traffic management plan, and the public right-of-way management plan. And again, each of those has a change table. In most cases, the changes are very small and reflect our discussions with the authorities and others. Then there are three new documents, again, that come out of these discussions. One is an environmental statement transport addendum. The second is a draft construction environmental management plan, noise and vibration management plan. So it's a further appendix that deals with noise and vibration management. And then there's what's called, at item 2.3, an environmental statement clarification note. That picks up various small errata and other points of clarification that our discussions with the stakeholders have identified, and we thought it, rather than drip feeding them, it was helpful to gather those together. Now, our, as I've said, we anticipate that these will be made available to the Planning Inspectorate this week, I believe Thursday this week. I'm just going to look around to confirm that. Yes, Thursday this week, so that you can put those up on your website.
Thank you, Mr. Humphreys. I'll just check if my panel members.
Of course.
Right, thank you. Are there any points from interested parties on this topic? Right, thank you then. We'll oh, sorry, I didn't see you there. Thank you, sir.
I'm hoping that it is. If you'll forgive me, I speak from here rather than coming forward to the naughty seat. Andrew Newcombe, Queen's Counsel, instructed by Wedlake Bell on behalf of the Port of Bristol, madam, which appears in your list of interested parties as the Bristol Port Company. Forgive me, the reason for intervening now, and it may be you wish me to take the point at a later stage, is because, for instance, the reference to revised book of reference raises the question of when we're going to receive a revision which clearly identifies the quantum of land required for option A on the one hand, as against option B on the other, as opposed to an agglomerated list. I simply mention it now for completeness in passing, and if you prefer to take it at a later stage in the meeting, then so be it.
That's very helpful, Mr. Newcombe. In fact, the next issue that I did want to be discussed was the matter that you had raised in your submissions to us, namely the examination procedure for consideration of option A and option B. So perhaps we could come and deal with that point in the context of that topic in a moment. If there's no other questions or points people want to make on that particular topic, it's probably an appropriate point in which to take a short break. So if we adjourn now and resume at 10 past 12.